Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Michael is off tonight. I will be filling in for him. Michael, my buddy, if you're listening, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for this incredible, wonderful opportunity to fill in for you, my friend. You know I think so highly of you. You know what I think of the quality of your show. But to be able to fill in for you today, of all days, with the debt ceiling crisis now looming, with Obama speaking to the nation tonight, with the terror attacks in Oslo, Norway, still fresh on everybody's minds. Michael, I just cannot thank you enough, my friend. To all of you out there, go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest sizzling, cutting-edge stories, stories you just cannot get anywhere else. For example, Obama's green car regulation to cost hundreds of thousands of jobs. He is, as Dr. Savage so eloquently puts it, Obama the destroyer. Today, Obama went in front of La Raza, the race, and said he's tempted to grant amnesty to 20 million illegal immigrants on his own, if he has to. You can read these stories and so much more on michaelsavage.com. But the story that is dominating michaelsavage.com, and in many ways, even with the debt ceiling debate now looming, it is clearly what happened in Oslo on Friday. And you can read all about it in michaelsavage.com. What we saw Friday was a glimpse of the future. A glimpse of what is going to happen to Europe in 20, 30, 40 years. A radical right-wing militia extremist, Anders Breivik, apparently, almost single-handedly, according to Norwegian police, placed bombs in a van outside of government buildings in downtown Oslo, and then from a safe location detonated those bombs, killing seven people and destroying numerous buildings. But the Norwegian madman was not done. He then drove to an island 25 miles out of Oslo at a youth camp for the Labour Party, the ruling leftist Labour Party, and dressed as a policeman with a machine guns and ammunition, began to systematically gun down the young children and teenagers at that camp. And what was most heinous, what was most vile and despicable, frankly, almost unimaginable, was when they heard, when those teenagers heard about what had happened in Oslo, they were frightened. And he came pretending to be a police officer and said, come out from your hiding. Don't hide. You don't have to hide underneath the desks. Come out. And as they came out trusting him, he gunned them down like dogs in the street. Panic ensued. People jumped into the water. People desperately sought to flee. And he hunted them down like animals, shooting them one after another. We don't know the full count of dead bodies yet from both the explosion and the murderous rampage. Figures went as high as 92 or 93. They're now downgrading them to maybe 68 or 70. We will get a full number soon. But the point is this. There was a mass atrocity in Norway done by a radical right-wing fundamentalist. a man who decried multiculturalism and mass Muslim immigration into Norway and into Europe, a man who issued a 1,500-page manifesto on the internet, many of whose writings, in fact, were plagiarized from the Unabomber. Now, I have to ask all of you this. What this man did was not just heinous and vile. It was the act of a lunatic, insane madman. And yet, when I hear the leftist media in Europe, but especially the liberal media, the fifth columnists here in America, what is the story now? What is the narrative? Is it that this was a madman who went out and gunned down innocent people, his own people, Norwegians? Something you rarely see in Europe? Something you rarely see in America? No. Now the liberals in the media are spinning a new tale. Remember, they're the ones who keep telling us whenever there is an atrocity committed by a Muslim terrorist, don't indict his religion. Don't mention his religion. You can't mention his ethnicity or his religion. You can't do that. That's profiling. That's racism. That's discrimination. But with him, he's a Christian militant. He's a Norwegian fanatic. He's a Christian fundamentalist. They can't stop mentioning his religion. He's a white supremacist. And so now you have the liberal media in America taking an atrocity that occurred not in America, not even in Canada, hell, not even in Britain, thousands of miles away in Norway, a tiny little insignificant country in Scandinavia. And now, all of a sudden, Janet Napolitano was right. Barack Obama was right. The New York Times was right. The real danger is domestic terrorism from white militia groups, from Christian fundamentalists, from Timothy McVeigh types. This is now the real danger in America. And so on CNN, here you have this apparatchik, this liberal leftist hack, Tom Fuentes, a former FBI agent, is telling now the anchor at CNN, oh no, this is very serious. We now have to look. You see, we have to understand now. We have to look at the KKK. We have to look at neo-Nazis. We have to look at white supremacists. That's the real threat here in America. It's the return of Timothy McVeigh. Boys, roll clip 3.
This is something that we've seen before. In the U.S., we've seen this for decades, and so has Europe. It appears from his manifesto that the philosophy is very similar to a neo-Nazi type group. White supremacist groups have that philosophy. Some of the militia groups in our country have been that way. And this reminded me very much of a McVeigh-type bombing, the use of a large fertilizer bomb, only followed in this case by attacks with firearms. Remember, in the McVeigh era, we didn't even have the type of websites and internet communication that we have today. So people were reading things like the Turner Diaries and other books that inspired them to carry out violence on behalf of their philosophy.
So you see, this is another Timothy McVeigh here in America. We have to be careful because now people can read the Turner Diaries. You see, they can read these right-wing fascist madmen who fantasize about a racial holy war. No, these are the people that really threaten us. Now, my question to you is a simple one. This is just simple common sense. When was the last time a Timothy McVeigh type atrocity occurred in America? 16 years ago. Yet the left won't stop talking about it. You would think it just happened yesterday. 16 years ago. But what has happened in the meantime? We've had Timothy McVeigh. 9/11. 3,000 Americans dead. Fort Hood. Nadal Hassan. Guns down, innocent American service members, men and women, in an act of cold, murderous atrocities. You have the Unabomber. You have the underwear bomber. You have the killings where they're targeting now military recruitment centers. I could run down a list. You had the Madrid bombings. You had the London bombings. You had the Bali bombings. You had the shoe bomber, Richard Reed, who tried to blow up a plane entering Miami. On and on and on. It's almost every month there is some kind of Muslim extremist atrocity and terrorist act committed, either here in America or around the world. But now there's one madman. And suddenly, the danger is from the radical right. Suddenly now, the danger is not from the Islamofascists. No, the danger is from the radical right. Timothy McVeigh lives on. The ghost of Timothy McVeigh. And so now, the liberal leftist media is jumping all over this and using this atrocity, this heinous act of mass senseless murder, to smear conservatives, to smear nationalists, to smear populists, and to smear the American right. And so now, almost like they're dancing to Obama's tune, almost like now willing executioners for big sis Janet Napolitano. No, the big danger are pro-lifers, people who oppose massive immigration. People who oppose illegal immigration. It's American domestic terrorists. That's the big threat. So here you have Kyra Phillips from CNN now asking this guy, Tom Fuentes, this FBI agent, well, what do you think we should be doing here in America to fight all this home?
Right now, when it comes to our safety here in the U.S. and homegrown terrorism.
Well, the FBI's focus on what it calls domestic terrorism in this case has always been intense for decades, fighting the Ku Klux Klan, fighting other neo-Nazi Aryan supremacist groups. And this has been ongoing a long time. The focus is, when does freedom of speech cross the line into a conspiracy to commit a crime or to commit murder, if there is a conspiracy?
Now it's even freedom of speech. When does right-wing freedom of speech now threaten us here in America? Nothing happened in America. This was in Norway. And so the question before the House is a simple one. What do you fear more? Radical Christian fundamentalism, as embodied by Anders Breivik in Norway, or Islamofascists, as embodied by the likes of Osama bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri? 1-800-449-8255 is the number. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. We now have the atrocity and mass murder in Oslo, Norway. At least 65, 70 people are dead. The death toll could even be higher. The question I have for you, members of the Savage Nation, who do you fear more? The radical militia right wing or Islamofascism? Let's go to Walter in New York on line one. Walter, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I'd like to just say there's no way that this man could have been a true Christian, because there's nothing he could find in the New Testament or what Jesus said that would justify anything he did. Jesus thought, bless them that curse you, do good to those who spitefully use you. And so there's absolutely no grounds for him to call himself a Christian.
Walter, you're completely right. And I want to thank you for that call, because, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. Since when did a far right wing racial supremacist become a Christian? Because he says he's a Christian. And as I was just telling Beowulf during the break, the show's producer, I've been combing this man's writings all afternoon. I have looked at his statements. I have looked at stuff that he's now posted. This guy is as Christian. If this guy's a Christian, I mean, then everybody's a Christian. This guy doesn't cite the New Testament. He doesn't cite the Old Testament because he cannot have any justification for what he did. Christ was the Prince of Peace. The one thing he taught was nonviolence. What this man was worried about was that the rise of radical Islam, combined with multiculturalism, was destroying the identity of Norway and of Europe. And then he went into a mad descent into saying, I need terror to awaken the masses. And this is what he did. And this is why he deliberately targeted the government buildings to bring down and kill the leading members of the Labour Party. And he admitted himself now under testimony when he was investigated. He gave testimony to this saying, I wanted to kill the Prime Minister. I wanted to kill the current generation of Labour Party leaders in Norway. And then I wanted to target the Labour camp, the youth camp, the Labour Party's youth camp, to go after the next generation of leaders. That's what he did. So suddenly now, have you noticed? But suddenly now, they're not calling him a white supremacist. They're not calling him some sort of neo-Nazi kook. He's a Christian. Ooh, suddenly now they love to play up his alleged religious affiliation. Suddenly his religion is very important when it comes to Muslim terrorists, when it comes to Islamists. Never mention their religion. Nidal Hassan, the butcher of Fort Hood, the fact that he's Muslim, who cares? The fact that all of these atrocities that I've pointed out from 9/11 to London to Madrid were done by Islamo-fascists, nobody will mention that. But this man's religion, it's everywhere. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to our blazing phone lines. Jeffrey in Chicago on line one. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, it's easy.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Why do you mean you're... No, I guess we lost them. I guess you don't have an argument there, do you, Jeffrey? And let me address another point, because this is a very key point. And this goes to the heart of the matter. What you saw in that phone call is already what you're seeing in the leftist media. Now they're saying, oh, you see, you have to ban the likes of Jeff Cooner. You have to ban the likes of conservatives, because you see, all of the conservatives in America are now to blame for what happened in Norway. Well, I have a question for all these left-wingers out there. You tell me, who is the one that perpetrated the atrocities on 9/11? Who is the one that perpetrated the atrocities in Madrid? Who is the one that perpetrated the London bombings? Who is the one that was behind the shoe bombing attempt to blow up a plane in Miami? Who was behind the underwear bomber in Detroit a couple years ago? Who is the one that committed the atrocities in Fort Hood? I could stand here for an hour and list atrocity or attempted terrorist atrocity after another. And so now, with the rise of Islamic fascism all over the world, now the left is going to use one incident by one nutcase in one country, several thousand miles away? Since when did we become a province of Norway? Since when do I speak for Norwegian conservatives? Since when does Michael Savage speak for Norwegian conservatives? But you see, they're so desperate now to use this one incident by this one lunatic to suddenly smear the entire right. That's the game that they're going to play now. And you know what's really sad about all this, members of the Savage Nation? You want to know what's really tragic? It's this. And guarantee it. Mark this date and mark this time that I've said it to you. The European right is now going to be neutralized. It is going to be shattered by this event. Because now, you want to know who the big winner is from this? The big winner is for all the Islamists in Europe and around the world. If I were them, if I was some mad jihadist, I'd be popping my champagne corks. Because now, whenever you mention the threat of radical Islam, whenever you mention how ineffectual and cowardly multicultural socialists in Europe and in America are in confronting the threat of radical Islam, you know what they're going to say? Breivik, Breivik, you're just like that Norwegian terrorist. Your ideas are akin to terrorism. And they're going to use it as a whip to discredit what everybody knows, which is that if you go to London, Paris, Hamburg, and Oslo, mention the country, you see a growing, surging Muslim population that is becoming increasingly radicalized, in which you have numerous terrorist cells who are plotting to destroy the West and Christianity as we know it. They want to kill every Jew. My question to all the leftists is this. You preach multiculturalism. You preach tolerance. You preach openness. Okay, fine. You're open. You're tolerant. Go to Amsterdam. I dare you. Go to Amsterdam. See what the Muslims in Amsterdam have done to homosexuals. See if you can find one homosexual now in Amsterdam because of all the gay bashing. They want to execute homosexuals. And so homosexuals are fleeing Amsterdam. If you're Jewish, go to Gothenburg, Sweden. I dare you. You can't find one Jew left in Gothenburg, Sweden because the Muslims have chased them all out. But now you're going to use this incident of this one madman to now smear the entire right and any legitimate criticism of Islamofascism. This is the real travesty here. What this man has done has given the jihadists a gift from Allah. That's what he's done. He's given them the greatest gift they could ask for. So now what's going to happen is this. You're going to have 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of more Madrids, of more Londons, of more 9/11s. Until the West finally wakes up and says, you know what? We have allowed the Trojan horse into our home. Radical Islam is on the march. And if you think I'm making this up, let me just tell all of you one thing. I'm not reading from books. I'm not reading from newspapers. When Dr. Savage criticizes the threat of radical Muslim fundamentalism, I've seen it with my own eyes. I've been to London. Go to East London. Mosque after mosque after mosque, they are preaching holy war. I have seen demonstrations, not with hundreds, with thousands of British Muslims calling for the overthrow of the British government and demanding that Sharia be imposed in Britain. I was in France at La Grande Mosque de Paris, the Great Mosque of Paris, where a Muslim imam told me to my face, there is a holy war coming. We are going to wage jihad against the French, against Europe, and then we are coming for you in America. Afghanistan and Iraq will be your graveyard, he said to me. This was when Bush was in power. He said, go tell that to President Bush. We are coming for you. So don't stand there and lecture me and tell me that the threat is Michael Savage or the threat is Jeff Kooner or the threat is conservatives or conservative Christians. What this man did was not conservative nor Christian. He was a mass murdering, insane madman. That's what he was. So, but my question to all you leftists is this. Why now is he a Christian all of a sudden, huh? Suddenly now you want to play the religious card, but you don't want to play it when it comes to the Muslims. You are hypocrites and you're cowards. And you know what? You are literally empowering the very enemies who want to slit your throats. That's how stupid you are. Jimmy in Ann Arbor, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I just want to say that this is definitely being played in the media to attack the Tea Party, Campaign for Liberty, people that support Ron Paul, people that are... I've been in the militia for 25 years. They've attacked us constantly as being racist. My wife is Jewish. My children are Jewish. I happen to be a Christian. I sell lambs off my farm to Muslims from Dearborn all the time. This is not a racist nation. The media wants it to be a racist nation. That is the
well, that's, real... You nailed it. No, that's their narrative, and that's what they've been peddling for 50 years in this country. That middle America, red state America, America outside of New York, Washington, and L.A. are full of racist hicks. It's the exact opposite. Middle Americans are the most decent, tolerant people in the history of the world. But again, my question is a simple one. I don't want to berate this point. I don't want to beat a dead horse. What does the act of one madman in, God's sakes, in Norway, it's not even in Canada. I'd say, well, okay, if it's Canada. Canada to me is the 51st state of America. Okay, Canada. It happened in Toronto or Vancouver. Okay. In Norway. I mean, seriously, what does Norway have to offer except lousy Beerlingu? I've been to Norway. Ay, ay, ay. Friends with benefits. That began there 30 years ago, that term. So what does Norway have to offer? Nothing. What does Norway have to do with us? Nothing. Now we got to target the KKK. Now we got to target right-wing militias. Now we have the return of Timothy McVeigh. And notice, I mean, we could talk this all day. Much of his manifesto is plagiarized from Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, the environmentalist wacko. Much of it, word for word, is plagiarized from Ted Kaczynski, a left winger, a radical environmentalist. Oh, we don't want to mention that. Hey, what about the Weather Underground? What about Bill Ayers? What about Bernadine Dorn when they were blowing up police stations and attacking the Pentagon, blew up themselves in Greenwich Village? Some of the underground Weather Underground supporters blew themselves up in Greenwich Village, killing themselves. What about the Black Panthers who gunned down police officers? Huh? You don't want to mention domestic left-wing terrorism. No, it's Timothy McVeigh. 16 years ago, it's like it happened yesterday. Timothy McVeigh. Radical right wing. It's Ron Paul is going to lead to mass murder on the streets of San Francisco or Chicago. Limited government, low taxes, and the Federal Reserve. Suddenly you have a mass murder on your hands. That's how twisted their logic is. And yet the real enemy marches on. The real enemy gets bigger. Just yesterday, the Hitler of our time, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, comes out and now openly tells the world we're on the verge of a nuclear bomb. He's admitted it. He's not even pretending anymore it's for domestic purposes. We have a nuclear weapons program. We're on the verge of a nuclear bomb. And then he said this. The days of the Jewish state are coming to an end. Hezbollah on the march. Hamas on the march. Fundamentalists, Islamist fundamentalists in Libya are now on the verge of overthrowing the government in Tripoli, backed by the United States, backed by Britain, backed by France. The Taliban recently just killed the brother of Hamid Karzai. They're on the verge of defeating us in Afghanistan. And the threat, you're going to tell me, is Timothy McVeigh? I mean, this would almost be comical if the consequences were not so tragic. So, my friends, what I am trying to tell you is don't get hoodwinked by the fifth columnists in the media. They have an agenda, and that agenda is to destroy all opposition to the socialists and to the radical Marxists who dominate the West, especially the con man in chief, Barack Obama. They're already spinning this. This thing that happened in Norway, already Tea Party implications. Michelle Bachmann. I'm sensing Michelle Bachmann's supporters here now. I'm sensing Rick Perry's supporters here.
I'm sensing a lot of conservatives. Middle American conservatism, Michael Savage. I'm sensing money. You ban him from Britain. He moves. He goes across the continent, goes on top, goes to Northern Europe. You get the connection? You get the connection now? That's what they want you to believe. And I ask you, who's the fantasist? My friends, we have met the enemy. And it is not Christians. It is not Jews. It is not moderate Muslims. It is radical Islam. And if we can't even identify the threat, if we can't even say that these people want to destroy us, when they tell us every day by their words, deeds, and actions, how are we supposed to win? This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 for the absolute latest on the Oslo murderer. Go to michaelsavage.com for some absolutely must-read, cutting-edge stories you will not find anywhere else. Michelle in Mississippi, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, sir. Just one comment, and that is terrorism, regardless of the person who commits it. It doesn't matter what their political affiliation, their religion, their beliefs. Once they commit an act of terrorism, it's just that. It's terrorism. Why should we bring in the politics to it when it just demeans the memories of the people who have been killed by this heinous act?
Well, Michelle, the politics is important for this reason. When you have an ongoing war, as I believe we do have from radical Islam, who are killing millions of people, not thousands, not hundreds of thousands, but over the last 20 years, millions of people in the name of a political religious ideology, you have to name it. You have to be cognizant of it. You have to identify it, or else the carnage is going to continue. You are going to see more and more and more and more victims. And so what's happening now, Michelle, and this is the tragedy, this is frankly what's sickening, it's revolting, is they are taking the act of a lunatic, of a depraved, vile madman. And they're saying, ah, he speaks for the right. He speaks for all conservatives. Not only that, he speaks for all nationalists. No, let me do you one up. He speaks for Christians. You see, you have Muslim terrorists and you have Christian terrorists. So you see, you have moral equivalence. They're both the same. One is not worse than the other. When in fact, we know the evidence is overwhelming, it's irrefutable, that the threat that we face is that of Islamic extremism. And this threat is getting bigger and stronger by the day. Look, don't even take, Michelle, I don't want you to take my word for it. Don't take my word for it. Forget even my experiences. This one basic fact should chill everybody in the Savage Nation. In Britain, there is a huge Muslim population. In fact, in London, the most common name for a boy, most common male name now, born in hospitals, is Mohammed. That's how quickly the Muslim population is growing in London. The Daily Telegraph, a major respected British newspaper, held a poll among British Muslims. These are those that were willing to say this on the record. I think the actual number is much higher. But 40%, think of that number. That's nearly one in two British Muslims said, we want Sharia law imposed in Muslim areas of Britain. We don't respect British laws. We don't respect British culture. We don't respect British values and norms.
We want Sharia here. Sharia enables slavery, the execution of adulterers, women treated as second-class citizens, the stoning of adulterers. It is a form of primitive barbarism. That is the future. That is England. That is France. That is Italy. That is Germany. And unless we stop it, this will be America. Radical Islam combined with multiculturalism is the suicide of the West. And I'm telling you, under Sharia law, if you're Jewish, if you're a homosexual, if you're a woman, if you're a Christian, if you're an infidel, you will either be enslaved. This is what happens in every Islamist country in the world where Sharia law prevails. So the ideology is everything. The ideology is at the root cause of this struggle. And rather than us saying, my God, look at the monster we've unleashed. Look at what we've let into our borders. Look what we've let into our midst. We pretend, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. The problem again is Timothy McVeigh. No, it isn't. It's radical Islam. And it's about time people finally said it. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is off tonight. I will be filling in for him. Michael, my brother, my buddy, if you're listening, my friend, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for the incredible honor and opportunity of filling in for you. You have a superb show. And I got to tell you, man, I was just telling Beowulf, I don't know how it just flies. Time on this show just flies. You have an incredibly well-oiled machine. Go to michaelsavage.com for some of the most important stories that are out there today. We have been talking about the Oslo murderer, the atrocities that occurred in Oslo over the weekend. We will continue to talk about this on michaelsavage.com. But there's a certain angle I want to take to the rise of radical Islam and the rise of Islamic fundamentalism in Europe and in the West that I think people are overlooking. In fact, I know people are overlooking. If you go to michaelsavage.com, there is a culture story about a singer, a pop singer, by the name of Amy Winehouse, who died over the weekend of an apparent drug overdose at the age of 27. Here was a woman who literally had the world in the palm of her hand. I've seen some videos of her. My wife is, in fact, used to be a fan of hers for a while in her early career. My wife told me, she said, Jeff, she's got a brilliant voice. I never heard her sing, but my wife said she's got a brilliant voice. Here was a woman, a British pop singer, found dead in her home in London. A woman who for years glorified the use of heroin, crack, cocaine, ecstasy. You name the drug, she glorified it, she sang about it, she championed it. She lived often in a crack house. I saw a couple of BBC reports. Frankly, it broke my heart. Her body littered in tattoos. Her face pierced all over. And surrounded by junkies. And there she is, smoking crack and injecting herself with heroin. And for years, the pop culture establishment, not just in Britain, but here in America, celebrated her as an avant-garde artist, celebrated her work as the work of a brilliant artist, someone who lived on the edge, somebody who wasn't afraid to take drugs and sing about drugs. And now, at the age of 27, in the prime of her youth, in the prime of her career, wasted, used up, burnt out, dead. Now, many of you may say, Jeff, what does this have to do with radical Islam? It has everything to do with the rise of radical Islam. It's so obvious, but the leftists in the media and the leftists in Hollywood and the leftists in pop music and pop entertainment and pop culture don't want you to see it. When Muslims come to Europe, when Muslims enter Britain, what culture do they see? Do they see a Christian culture? Do they see the British culture of Victorian England that created one of the greatest empires in the world? Is that what they see? Do they see the British lady and the British gentleman? Do they see Shakespeare or Jane Austen or literature that is almost unrivaled in the history of humanity? That's not what they see. They don't see a proud, vibrant, self-confident nation and culture. They see Amy Winehouse. They see a woman who pumps out one hit record and one hit album after another, celebrating cultural decadence, celebrating heroin, celebrating life as a drug addict, and then being celebrated, lionized by America's and Europe's cultural elites. My friends, I mentioned to you previously, when I was in Paris, how I was confronted in the great mosque of Paris, La Grande Mosque de Paris, as they call it, by a radical Muslim imam. And the line that got to me, the line that I said, this war may not be winnable for the West, was when he told me, and I'll never forget this, he railed about Afghanistan, he railed about Iraq, he railed about George Bush, but he said this. He said, and I'll never forget this. He said, what is French culture? What is Western culture? Drugs? Pornography? Rap music? Abortion? Homosexuality? Look at the way you treat your women, he said to me. Look how you parade them. Look how you peddle drugs to our children. And then he turned around. We were in a bathhouse underneath the mosque where people have to go to wash their feet so they can pray. Their feet have to be clean. He said, look around you. There were a lot of young men, all in their 20s, giving me these ferocious looks. If looks could kill, they would have killed me on the spot. And they had this intense look in their eyes against me because they could see I was an American. He said, look around you. These are my holy warriors. These are my mujahideen. Their feet are clean. Their bodies are clean. Their souls are clean. Their minds are clean. Unlike you decadent Americans. Unlike you decadent Europeans. You want us to assimilate to your culture? He said to me, no way. Now, you ask yourself, why do so many Muslims in Europe and in Britain, when they come to Britain or any country, Norway, take your country, hate and despise the culture that they're in? Why do they want to impose Sharia law on their communities? Why do they want to live in self-imposed enclaves away from the dominant culture? Because when they look at this moral and cultural decadence, when they look at somebody like Amy Winehouse and say, my God, that's what British children are listening to? That's what British children are imitating? Not for our children. No way. Members of the Savage Nation, our cultural liberalism, our decadence is a major factor in fueling the rise of radical Islam. So you can crucify Anders Breivik, this Norwegian mass murderer, all you want. And you can play your cheap political games and go after the Tea Party and go after conservatives and go after Michael Savage or go after me. But this threat is not going to go away because it is being fueled by something deeper, larger, and more profound. Our decadence, our loss of our Judeo-Christian morals and heritage is fueling radical Islam. The more decadent we become, the more perverse we become, the more Amy Winehouses we produce, the more suicide bombers you're going to see, the more Sharia law you're going to see, the more Muslim extremism you're going to see. This is why I have been arguing for years. Until we restore a culture of life, until we return to our Judeo-Christian roots, we will never defeat radical Islam. The more multicultural we become, the more secular we become, the more we are signing our own death warrants. And to the multicultural socialists in America and Europe, I have one question for you. You say you claim tolerance. You say you claim openness. You say we need diversity. But have you noticed who you let into your country? You don't let in Christians from Nigeria. You don't let in Christians from Somalia or from Sudan. Have you noticed that? You don't let in Christians from Eastern Europe. No. We can't have too many Polish Catholics in England. Can't have that. No. We can't have too many Christians from Iraq who are being slaughtered by Muslim militants as we speak. No. There's no refugee status for Christians from Iraq. No. But you allow in the most destabilizing, the most anti-Western, the most group that is most virulently opposed to the West and to Europe. It's almost like you want instability. It's almost like you want people who will create chaos and not assimilate and not integrate. You are picking the one group, Muslims from the third world, many of them already radicalized before they even come in, to allow them into England or allow them into Europe. Because you want a society that's broken. You want to divide and conquer. You are so full of self-loathing for your history and Christianity and your culture and your society, you want to bring in its mortal enemies. And then you feed us the mother of all lies. Diversity is our strength. Diversity is our strength. No, it isn't. Unity is. Ask any football team. Ask any baseball team. Ask any military. Ask anybody that has to achieve a serious goal. Unity is what makes you strong, not diversity, stupid. So, my friends, what the death of Amy Winehouse shows is that Britain is on its last legs. And now The Guardian and the BBC and all those that want to ban Michael Savage and continue that ban are now saying, you see, look what the Christian right supposedly gave us in Norway. They are selling you a false bill of goods. Christianity and conservatism had nothing to do with what happened in Norway. What happened in Norway was an insane, twisted, evil response to the rise of radical Islam. But Islam is not going to go away. It is only going to grow. And the more Amy Winehouses we have, the more cultural decadence we have, the more secular liberalism we have, the stronger Islam is going to get. And so the question I have for you is this. Do you mourn the death of Amy Winehouse? And do you believe cultural liberalism? Do you believe our Hollywood pop culture is inevitably going to kill our society and our civilization? 1-800-449-8255 is the number. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. David in Denver, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I just had a call in to take an issue with you on the topic of Islam there. Our liberalism is not the problem. The problem is the Quran and the example of Muhammad. And even to suggest that so-called moderate Muslims are not the problem. We could all live perfect Christ-like lives, and they would still have to hate us because that's what their religion commands of them.
David, you make a very good point. We know the militant and expansionist and militaristic history of Islam. We know that. But you're missing my point. We now essentially have two cultures, and they're now fighting for dominance, a rising liberal culture and an old conservative culture. In the past, faith was able to defeat faith. When we were at war with radical Islam for centuries, the Christian West was invincible. But now, because of this new secular morality that has seeped into the West since the 1960s, we have become weaker. We have become more decadent. We are now unable to confront the threat of radical Islam. And more than that, this Amy Winehouse and many like her, the drugs, the promiscuous sex, the abortions, the promotion of homosexuality, the promotion of bisexuality, all of this is creating massive repulsion around the world. And the question that I have, frankly, for everybody out there, but especially the liberals, here you had a singer that sang about drugs, that sang about drug use, that in fact even sang how she knew she had a drug problem but refused to take rehab, and millions of teenage fans adored her for it. Did you allow your children to listen to Amy Winehouse or drugged out singers like her? In other words, are you a parent first or are you a liberal first? Because this is the lifestyle that you preach. This is your sex, drugs, and rock and roll from the 1960s. Do you allow your children to listen to Amy Winehouse? Do you think that's a good influence for our children? And to the Muslims out there, let's be frank. This is censorship-free radio. Call the Savage Nation. And I want to ask you, do the likes of Amy Winehouse and people similar to her, drugged-out singers, do they repulse you? Do they, when you look at them, do you say, this is the decadent West and we want no part of it? 1-800-449-8255. I'll be taking your calls right after this break. This is Jeff Cooner sitting for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage. We'll be right back.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. Max in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for taking my call. And thank you for what you're doing. One thing that concerned me is Hillary made an announcement that they're going to be supplying funds to the Muslim Brotherhood to help them, one of the things, to help them construct, to redo their sewer system. And it occurred to me that during the French Revolution, the revolutionaries used to go down into the sewer system after performing their, whatever, their revolutionary acts against the aristocracy. And it came to mind that, you know, these Egyptians might be doing the same thing after it's constructed.
I mean, Max, I'll be very honest with you. To me, what is going on with the support of the Muslim Brotherhood is stunning. Here you have Egypt. It is the cradle of Arab civilization that was run for decades by a pro-American and pro-Israel ally, Hosni Mubarak, and we threw him right under the bus. And all of these liberals, led by that silver-haired guy on CNN, what's his name? Anderson Cooper, whatever his name. There he is running around an Arab Spring, a new awakening. Democracy is coming. Democracy is coming. Radical Islam is coming. That's what's going to happen. And so under this con man in chief, under Obama, radical Islam is coming back in Afghanistan. Iran is now on the verge of getting a nuclear bomb, which will annihilate Israel. Iraq is falling under Iran's influence. You have Libya that's going to become Islamist, and now Egypt that's going to become Islamist. No president, and I'm choosing my words very carefully, in American history has done more to advance the forces of Muslim fascism and Muslim extremism than Barack Obama. He is a, for the Muslims, for radical Muslims, he is a gift from Allah himself. Let's go to Kevin in Austin. Kevin, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a point. I agree with mostly what you're saying, but the link between liberalism and drug addiction and Amy Winehouse's death is, I think, way off base. I mean, there's an epidemic of drug addiction in the United States, but the correlation between that and liberalism, I don't think have anything to do with each other. I mean, Kay's a drug addict. You could say a lot of things about him, but he's far from a liberal. I don't understand the correlation. This girl suffered from drug addiction. I mean,
Austin, you make an interesting point, but you're wrong, and here's why. Liberalism and drugs are inextricably linked. Why do I say that? Because in the 1960s, what all of these new age liberals, all of these, what they call themselves new leftists, they said FDR had it wrong. Truman had it wrong. It's not just redistribution of wealth that matters. We have to redistribute and destroy Christian morality. We have to, quote, liberate the individual. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. If it feels good, do it. And so for the last 50 years, the cultural elite in America, in England, and frankly, all across the West, has celebrated drug use, abortion, homosexual marriage, pornography. You watch Comedy Central, watch HBO, watch Bill Maher, that degenerate. Watch, I can go on. I could list one after another. What is it that they all praise? Oh, legalize marijuana. Go get stoned. I just saw a movie 2 weeks ago, Horrible Bosses. It was an okay film, but there it is. They're making fun of cocaine use. One of the characters, in fact, gets high as a kite, stoned out of his mind on cocaine, and they're laughing. It's funny to get stoned. So here you had a singer that was praised by Hollywood celebrities while she was alive. This is the key point. While she was alive. Praised by the British tabloids, praised by the entertainment industry, because she sang about drugs. It wasn't one song. It was song after song after song.
about how she's high and she loves being high and she refuses to get rehab, to go to rehab. She will not change. Her own father, a poor cab driver in London, begged the public several years ago. He didn't ask. He begged. Don't buy her albums. You're just fueling her drug lifestyle. You're going to kill her. You're going to help kill her. And so there you see one BBC documentary about her after another. I saw one. I couldn't believe it. There were needle marks all over her arm. Tattoos all over her body. She's stoned out of her mind. She goes on concert on stage, stoned out of her mind. She collapses on stage. She's so stoned. And everybody's praising her. And this is what they keep doing to our kids. Marijuana is everywhere in the schools. Drugs is everywhere in schools. Ecstasy. My wife and I are planning to adopt. And so this has opened my eyes to this massive drug subculture. Why? Because we spoke with several teenage girls that were thinking of giving up their child. They didn't, but we spoke with them. They're telling me, this girl was what, maybe 18? She said she began using ecstasy at 13. She says, Jeff, it's all over the schools. The teachers know about it. They don't care. People are experimenting with sex at 13, 14. Schools are handing out condoms. Schools are turning a blind eye to marijuana use, which is obviously a gateway drug. We have a nation since the 1960s that is swimming in drug use. You really want to know why so many Democrats keep getting reelected? I'm being very frank with you. You want to know why we have so many stupid people in America? They've destroyed their brains on drugs. They fried their brains on drugs. You could see it everywhere. So to tell me that we don't live in a liberal culture that's been fostering drug use, I mean, that to me is like denying the sky is blue. Now, you mentioned the golfer, as Dr. Savage so eloquently puts it, Rush Limbaugh. He's not a conservative. That's another myth. He's not a conservative. Savage, he is a Republican. He cares about money. That's all. That's his conservatism. Tax cuts and money and the business establishment. That explains him bragging on radio, on his show. He's always bragging about how he flies to the Dominican Republic. He says, flies to the Dominican Republic. And he quotes, sows his wild oats, and he's laughing and giggling. That's not a conservative. A conservative doesn't go to some third world country to diplomatically with to satisfy his son, brag about how he's... That's not a conservative. So he has been peddling a false bill of goods for years. For years. So don't lecture me that somehow afraid to tackle the homosexual lobby. He is afraid to tackle the radical Muslim lobby. He is afraid to frontally assault the abortion lobby. He pays lip service to opposing abortion. I don't see him going to the mat. So don't, you know, conservative. No, he's not. He's a guy who's been living on borrowed time and frankly, borrowed talent for years. He couldn't shine Dr. Savage's shoes. You want to know my honest opinion? That's my honest opinion. Let's go to Al in New York. Al, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi there. Hi there. This is Al from Butler, New Jersey. Listen, I got to tell you, you're correct. I live in Butler and Bloomingdale is the surrounding towns and some of the towns up to Kinnelon. Very influential towns. And I have to tell you that they do listen to this music that promotes the drug culture. And anyone who gets on the radio and says that this Amy, whatever her name is not part of the problem is crazy. I listen to what these kids are listening to. And I got to tell you, you're right on the money. And by the way, I stopped listening to that man many years ago when I realized he's nothing but a mouthpiece for the Republican Party. Michael Savage and yourself definitely are conservative, period.
Oh, no, you're right, Al. And listen, look, I mean, I don't want to make this. Here's what this makes my blood boil. I'm listening to the golfer. I'm listening to other people on talk radio. And all they do is spew Republican talking points. And I'm like, look, I can go to the RNC's website. I don't need to listen to you to get the Republican talking points. That's not what I need. What I need and what I want and what most Americans want is an independent conservative voice, somebody who will speak truth to power and speak to both Republicans and Democrats based on real eternal principles. Look, I don't want to mince words, so let me cut to the chase. There's a reason Michael Savage was banned in Britain and nobody else was. They're not banning John Boehner. They're not banning John McCain. They're not banning Mitt Romney. In other words, you parrot the Republican line. Don't worry about it. They won't ban you in Britain or anywhere in Europe. But you stand up to the radical Islamists. You stand up to the leftist traitors and call a spade, they're going to come at you with everything they have. And so to me, it's unbelievable. Amy Winehouse is a hero in England. To the cultural elites of England and America, she's a hero. Today, in prepping for this show, not that I really follow her, but it's a big story. She died over the weekend. She looks like she overdosed. It is one blog site after another by one Hollywood celebrity after another praising Amy Winehouse. Like, I don't know what. Like, this woman did more for the world than Mother Teresa. She was a drugged up, has-been woman with limited talent. She basically spent half her time in a crack house. And she poisoned the minds of our youth. She sang and glorified drug use, which is destroying our youth and destroying our culture. And people ask me, Jeff, how do you think the Muslims in Britain are going to assimilate to British culture and British civilization? They're not. Why? Think about it. Not that I'm justifying them. I'm not justifying them. But I'm explaining it. You think it's going to go away? They look at a Mick Jagger, Keith Richards. The guy, I don't know how this guy's managed to live 40 years on heroin. I'm telling you. Cigarettes and heroin for 40 years. I don't know how this guy's done it. I don't know how he's done it. I would have been dead in 4 months if I lived like him. And now Amy Winehouse. And you're going to say, you're a British Muslim. And you're going to say, sorry, Jeff, you want me to assimilate to them? You want drugs being peddled to my children? You want homosexuality being peddled to my children? You want them giving my kid contraception, condoms at 13? The pill at 13? No way. No way. Give us Sharia, but don't give us this. And so the point that I'm making is an obvious one. A liberal, secular culture cannot defeat radical Islam. You can't. This war will be lost. Until we return to our conservative nationalist roots, to our Judeo-Christian roots, to God, country, and family. This is what enabled the West to defeat radical Islam for centuries. In fact, for 1,000 years. You think this war is new? It's 1,000-year-old war. It was only interrupted during the 20th century with communism and Hitler. It was Christianity, our faith, that sustained us. No Christianity, no victory against radical Islam. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Garland in Santa Maria, California. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I had a comment about the whole Amy Winehouse issue with her drug problem.
Go ahead, Garland.
And Amy hasn't put out a record in about 5 years now, and I think really it's just a shame that she's more so of a casualty of this drug culture. We do have a drug culture in music. I'm a musician myself, and with Richards and Jagger and all of them, they're very influential on us. But I just think that, we all have a choice. And, you know, Winehouse hasn't put out a record in 5 years, and it just sucked that she had to die because she was coming back, you know. And
Garland, I'll be honest with you. I mean, she wasn't coming back. Her drug use was getting worse. Her talents were deteriorating. Her mind was deteriorating. She was becoming incoherent. And this is what nobody tells anybody. For years, we've been told, you do a little cocaine, no problem. You do a little marijuana, no problem. You snort a little crack cocaine or suck on a crack pipe a little bit, no problem. Pop an ecstasy pill, no problem. What happens is, over the long term, it ravages your body, it destroys your brain, and it slowly takes away your ability to take care of yourself. You become addicted. You become an addict, slowly but surely. And millions of people, since the 1960s, when we began to really glorify drug use, when it became part of the rock and roll culture and part of the teenage culture, now it's almost a rite of passage. I have not met one teenager, and I do a lot of public speaking, who told me they haven't done drugs. In fact, they tell me the opposite. They're under tremendous peer pressure to do drugs, starting with ecstasy and marijuana. And then they usually start graduating to even more hardcore drugs. It's now become like a rite of passage. It's becoming like turning 18. It's like going to the prom. You got to get stoned at least once in your life. No, you don't. And so what is happening is we are destroying our youth. We are destroying our culture. We are destroying our self-respect as a people and as a nation. For what? For a cheap high? She had the whole world in front of her. Her own father begged the public not to watch her, not to listen to her, not to buy her albums, because he knew where this was going to end up, a funeral. Let's go to Becky in Las Vegas. Becky, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, you know, I wanted to say that we've just witnessed, in the whole Casey Anthony trial, we've just witnessed the ultimate girl who goes out there and lives the life that the left tells her to live. She was all that she was supposed to be. She had the illegitimate child. She had the nightlife. She was sleeping with every guy in town. She was doing drugs. She was drinking. She was leeching off her parents. She was as low as they go. And until she killed her child, she was not a pariah in the media. That was what twisted it. When they, that went too far. It was almost like they went, oh my gosh, what happened here?
Becky, you nailed it. You nailed it. There she was, neglecting her kid, child out of wedlock, getting stoned, getting drunk, shacking up and sleeping with every guy she could find at a honky-tonk. No problem. No problem. She wasn't ostracized. She wasn't criticized. She wasn't made to feel in any way like she was a moral degenerate, a leech upon the community. Frankly, an embarrassment. No, 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 no. No problem. And then things got a little hot for her. But even then, in Florida, if you get the right shyster lawyer, the right bottom feeder, hey, as I was telling people in the newsroom, if you can't do the time, do the crime in Florida. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is off tonight. My friend, if you're listening, I want to thank you one last time for the wonderful honor and opportunity of filling in for you tonight. My friend, I don't know where the 2 hours have gone so far, but they are just blazing by. Michael, thank you so much, my buddy. To all of you out there, go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest stories that you have to read. And right now, my friends, there is breaking news coming in right now to all of you on the Savage Nation. Tonight at 9 o'clock, the President of the United States is going to deliver a nationally televised address to the entire country. And we have just found out here on the Savage Nation that this address is going to be followed immediately by House Speaker John Boehner's rebuttal. It is now showdown at high noon. It is now Obama dueling with John Boehner in the eyes of the country. And as the clock is now ticking down to first Obama's address and then Boehner's address, all eyes of the nation and in many ways the eyes of the world are now on Washington. What will happen with the debt ceiling crisis? Will there be a deal? To deal or not to deal? That is the question. And over the past several weeks, Obama has now come out and thrown down the gauntlet. He is the one who has come out, and I believe given the Republicans a golden opportunity to now break him and break his presidency. It is Obama, and this is the key point that the media continues to neglect. It is Obama who has spent trillions of dollars. It is Obama who gave us the stimulus package. It is Obama who gave us Obamacare. It is Obama who has given us not one, not two, but three consecutive budgets with deficits over $1 trillion. And now, here we stand because of this man at $14.3 trillion in debt. That is our entire economy. We have now mortgaged the future of our children and our grandchildren. We have broken their financial backs. We have now indentured them into almost permanent servitude to big government. That's what we've done by racking up these reckless deficits. And now the man responsible for this, the man who shares, I think, primary blame. Yes, Bush did his part. No question about it. The Republicans in Congress did their part. No question about it. But over the last 2.5 years, we have seen a spending binge like we have never seen in our nation's history. Record deficits, record debt, record spending. Unsustainable. Nobody could pay off these debts. Nobody can pay off these deficits. And now the man who is responsible is now acting like the adult in the room. He's now the responsible grown-up. He's the guy among the children who now wants just some kind of a deal. Just raise that debt ceiling so we don't default. It is akin, as I told my wife today over breakfast, like Adolf Hitler in 1944, when he's now clearly losing the war, to say, guys, let's have a peace conference. Guys, somebody has to make peace. Somebody has to bring a war to an end. Somebody has to put the interests of Europeans first, of civilians first. That this man now claims to be the one that's responsible, to me, is utterly laughable. But now Obama has done the nation and Republicans a favor. He has come out and said, I want a big deal. I want a grand bargain. I want $4 trillion in cuts to the deficit.
and I want $1 trillion in tax increases, and I will accept nothing less. And if you give me a short-term hike in the debt ceiling, a short-term increase with spending cuts, as the House Republicans are pushing, I will veto it. Here is what I would do if I were John Boehner. I would say, you know what, Mr. President? You want to play tough guy? You want to sit around the table and call everybody's bluff because you got nothing and I'm holding a royal flush? Here's what I'm going to do. You come out. You're the one that's come out. You and Tim Geithner, Tax Cheat Tim Geithner. You guys are the ones that have come out and said, if we don't raise the debt ceiling, it's going to be fiscal Armageddon. It's going to be like an economic mushroom cloud over Washington and New York. It's going to be the end of the world. The sky's going to fall. We're going to have our credit downgraded. We're going to default. Businesses are going to flee. Capital is going to flee. The economy is going to collapse. We're going to enter a Great Depression. It's going to be the end of the world. Okay. By your reasoning, we cannot default. So fine. We're going to raise the debt limit. And we're going to tie it. For every dollar raised, we're going to cut $1 in spending. So the package pays for itself. Real spending cuts tied to raising the debt limit. We pass it. Do you want to veto or not veto? If you veto, then you are to solely blame for the default. Everything that happens, happens because of you, because of your veto. And if you don't veto, if you sign it, then we will expose you as a political weakling whose words have no meaning. His liberal base will defect. Progressives and Democrats will turn on him. And he will be a wounded president going into 2012. The Republicans have him over a barrel. And so my advice to John Boehner is, when Obama comes out tonight and starts whining and complaining about House Republicans and threatening to withhold grandma's Social Security check as he did a couple of weeks ago, I would call his bluff. I would say, you know what? We're going to pass the debt limit increase and we're going to tie it with real spending cuts because there is no adult in the White House. There is only a phony, a socialist revolutionary who has now brought us to the verge and brink of collapse. And he has played demagoguery at every turn in this debate. And the biggest lie, the mother of all lies, the great lie, worthy of Joseph Goebbels, is when he said grandma's Social Security check may not go out on August 3rd. That's a lie. I don't want to overwhelm you with statistics, but there's one key statistic. The government will take in nearly $200 billion in the month of August. That's the money they're going to get. That is more than enough to cover Social Security, to pay the full interest on the debt, to pay for Medicare, and to pay for benefits for our veterans. Grandma's not going to get her check. Grandma's not going to be withheld her check. Grandma's going to get her check. Everybody's going to get their check. There's going to be no government shutdown. That is a lie. He is deliberately lying to scare Americans, to create hysteria, to ram through his irresponsible borrowing and spending. You would think that with him playing with the nation's future, with our very livelihood, with our very economy, that he would slink away and sign a deal and keep quiet. Instead, he is actually now comparing himself, I kid you not, members of the Savage Nation, brace yourself, to Abraham Lincoln. Here is Obama delivering a speech where he says, you know what? Now is the time for grand, bold action. Boys, roll clip 17.
The nature of our politics is to marry principle to a political process that means you don't get 100% of what you want. You don't get it if you're in the majority. You don't get it if you're in the minority. And you can be honorable in politics, understanding that you're not going to get 100% of what you want.
Mm. So you're not going to get 100% of what you want. So Democrats, we may not get our $1 trillion in tax increases. Maybe Boehner and McConnell in the Senate could block us. But we're going to get that debt ceiling increased because I'm going to continue to borrow $2.4 trillion. I'm going to finish what I started because just like Lincoln, just like we defeated slavery, we're going to raise this debt ceiling. Listen to him compare himself to Lincoln and the emancipation of the slaves. Boys, roll clip 18.
You think about our greatest presidents. I mean, Abraham Lincoln, here's a guy who didn't believe in slavery, but his first priority was keeping the Union. And I've got the Emancipation Proclamation hanging up in my office. And if you read through it, it turns out that most of the document is those states and areas where the emancipation doesn't apply because those folks are allied with the Union, so they can keep their slaves. Think about that. That's the Emancipation Proclamation, right? So here you've got a wartime president who's making a compromise around probably the greatest moral issue that the country ever faced because he understood that right now my job is to win the war and to keep, to maintain the Union.
He's winning the war? Maintaining the Union? You're going to compare a debate over the debt ceiling to winning the war and maintaining the Union? 500,000 Americans were slaughtered in the Civil War. More Americans died in that war than all wars we've participated in combined. You're going to compare yourself to Lincoln? My friends, look how he is trying to falsely whip up hysteria. But more than that, look how he's trying to present himself as the Hugo Chavez, as the Castro, as the great leader, the Lenin, who is now going to forge through difficult turmoil and times like Lincoln did during the Civil War to beat the evil Republicans and borrow more money off our children and grandchildren. And so the question I have for you is this. Taking the president now at his own words, as we are counting down to his speech to the nation at 9 o'clock, do you believe the president, as he now clearly suggests in his comments, is the greatest president since Abraham Lincoln? What do you expect to hear from the president tonight? And do you think he is the greatest leader America has had since Abraham Lincoln? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. And in Las Vegas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. God bless you, Jeff and Michael Savage, for waking us up in America. Thank you for all your help. This one is worse. He hates Americans. He hates whites. He hates Americans. All of us. And we don't need this crap. We need our jobs back. We need America back. And darn it, all those stupid politicians that have all their businesses overseas to take it away from America. We've been the most
and
generous.
Look, we know this. Look, Obama is a traitor. Obama despises this country. He despises our Constitution. He despises our way of life. He despises capitalism. We know that. What I find remarkable is that this man actually believes in his own mind. He is so full of hubris, so drunk with power, so drunk with arrogance, that he actually believes in his own mind that he is the second coming of Abraham Lincoln, that he is now our new Lincoln, and that he is reliving the Civil War, and that now he is almost like preserving the Union. He's abolishing slavery and preserving the Union. So in these debt ceiling talks with Republicans, as he's going to speak to the nation in 35 minutes? He is now thinking in his own mind, he is like Lincoln. In the darkest hour, he now must save this country from the conservative hordes, from the conservative armies that are now marching apparently on Gettysburg, in his mind, in his twisted mind. Think of how drunk with power and how out of touch with reality this man is. He is the one who is systematically spending us into the ground, into oblivion. We are now on the verge of being bankrupt, of going the way of Greece because of this man. And he's comparing himself to Lincoln. And so the question that I have for every member of the Savage Nation, but in particular to liberals, to all of you, but I'm also a special appeal to liberals. He's compared himself in the past to FDR. He's compared himself in the past to John F. Kennedy. He's compared himself in the past to Mahatma Gandhi. Now, apparently, he's topped all three. Now he says he's Lincoln. Do you believe he's the greatest president since Abraham Lincoln? Is he America's new Lincoln? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on A Savage Nation.
Savage.
Essentially, what we had offered Speaker Boehner was over $1 trillion in cuts to discretionary spending, both domestic and defense. We then offered an additional $650 billion in cuts to entitlement programs, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. We believed that it was possible to shape those in a way that preserved the integrity of the system, made them available for the next generation, and did not affect current beneficiaries in an adverse way.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times filling in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. The president will be addressing the nation in about 26, 27 minutes. And here was the dear leader, the con man in chief, in the White House press room, continuing to spin and lie. And I have to tell you, the president of the United States, Mr. Obama, if your aides will not tell you, if the Democrats in Congress will not tell you, if Speaker Boehner will not tell you, then I will tell you. You are a pathological liar. You lie even when you don't need to lie. That's how much you lie. That recent statement of his, notice how he's trying to position himself. Oh, we bent over backwards. We bent over backwards. We gave Boehner everything he wanted. Hell, I gave him the store. I gave him everything, but I gave him the store. $1 trillion in cuts to discretionary spending, even threw in another $650 billion in cuts to entitlements. Those are all lies. It is what the Democrats and, frankly, some Republicans have been doing on Capitol Hill for decades. Raise the borrowing limit. Continue to borrow and spend. And mortgage are the futures of our children and grandchildren. Continue to bury us deeper in this financial hole. And push the real cuts way down the road. That $1 trillion that he's talking about, those aren't cuts. Those are the projected estimates of money that will be saved if and should the troops come back from Iraq and Afghanistan. That's over 10 years. If they should come back, we don't know if they will come back. So that's his bogus $1 trillion. That's a lie. That's smoke and mirrors. The $650 billion. Oh, you'd think, my God, he's taking a butcher's knife to Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. No, he's not. That money was already scheduled to go away from Medicare and Medicaid, to be diverted to pay for Obamacare. That money was already going to be siphoned off to pay for a fourth massive entitlement for trillions more to be spent on Obamacare. He's a complete pathological liar. Spending goes up. And when you have this kind of spending, and he knows this, and the Democrats know this, when you are now not at 14 trillion, we're talking 15, 16, 17 trillion, you have to massively increase taxes. That's what he wants. That's what this is all about. To permanently consolidate his socialist revolution. To make America a full socialist European welfare state. That's what this is all about. But no, you listen to the dear leader. My God. I mean, what he's proposing with Boehner, he's being more than fair. Before I get to the phone lines, I want to play you one more clip. Just to show you what a con man and a liar, a grifter, this guy is. Boys, roll clip 13.
This was an extraordinarily fair deal.
Oh, extraordinary.
If it was unbalanced, it was unbalanced in the direction of not enough revenue.
No.
But in the interest of being serious about deficit reduction, I was willing to take a lot of heat from my party.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Democratic leaders yesterday.
Yeah.
And although they didn't sign off on a plan, they were willing to engage in serious negotiations, despite a lot of heat from a lot of interest groups around the country, in order to make sure that we actually dealt with this problem.
Mm. Churchillian, Lincolnian, it's like Lincoln. He's going to persevere through all the odds. Everybody's telling him, you're shafting your base, Mr. President. You're giving away too much. You're cutting too much. You're too much of a deficit hawk. You're being too much of a fiscal conservative. Stop it. But no, the statesman said I wanted this great deal for the country. He's lying. I know this for a fact. Sources on Capitol Hill confirmed to me people that were in those negotiations between Boehner and Obama. This is an exclusive to the Savage Nation. That, in fact, it was Obama that kept asking for more tax increases. And when Obama went back and spoke to his Democrats, his pals, and Boehner's actually talking about serious cuts next year and the year after, it was impossible. Obama moved the goalposts. Obama changed the entire nature of the debate. So he's lying. This was no balanced deal. He wasn't willing to stand up to liberal special interest groups. He was running from special interest groups. They told him to go back and tell Boehner, we're not getting those cuts. Forget those cuts. The man, literally, I believe, is a compulsive, incorrigible liar. And I've said this about him from the beginning. I had him pegged dead to rights years ago. You want to know who Obama is at his core? Yes, he's a product of Saul Alinsky. Yes, he's a product of the 60s revolution. Yes, he's a Marxist. I know that. But even more, he's a Chicago street hustler. He's a street hustler from the south side of Chicago who has conned and lied his way throughout his entire career. And now this guy, now you think about this. What is his experience managing these sort of negotiations? He spent one third of one term as a senator, not even one term. One third of a term, 2 years. And now he's lecturing Boehner. He's lecturing McConnell. He's lecturing Harry Reid. He's lecturing all these Senate House negotiators on how to craft a deal. This guy is suddenly the expert on how to manage our money when he's the one that's brought us to the brink of collapse. My friends, you are now seeing the mother of all cons. And tonight, he is going to tell the American people, it's not his fault. It's the House Republicans' fault. And watch this prediction. He is going to say there is a stalemate. They can't come to an agreement. The Republicans and the Democrats, they just can't seem to agree, like little children squabbling and fighting and bickering. And he is going to demand that he unilaterally raise the debt ceiling. And that is illegal. And that is unconstitutional. And if he does that, mark my words, That is an impeachable offense. And you will see conservatives and Republicans demand that the president be impeached. You heard it here first. If he wants to unilaterally raise the debt ceiling and usurp that kind of power and behave like a wannabe dictator, this man will be impeached and thrown out of office before 2012. 1-800-449-8255. Tom in New York, you're on the Savage Nation.
Jeff Crooner filling in for Michael America Savage. That's red, white, and blue dynamite, baby.
I love you, Tom. What's on your mind, buddy?
Jeff, on a personal note, you're in our prayers for that adoption. You and Dr. Grace would make wonderful parents.
Oh, thank you, my friend.
Jeff, I believe the legal case before the federal bankruptcy court should be the U.S. taxpayers of America versus the United States federal government. Jeff, by anyone sane person's definition, we are approaching bankruptcy. If the federal government cannot make the necessary cuts in order to balance our budget, maybe a good, strong, conservative federal bankruptcy judge can figure out our priorities. And as far as raising taxes, Jeff, we've had the non-payers on our back for too long. We can't afford any more taxes. God bless you.
Thank you, Tom. This is, to me, the 800-pound gorilla in the room that nobody wants to address. So if they won't address it, I will. The president keeps saying we need a balanced approach. The rich have to pay their fair share. Corporate jet owners, hedge fund managers, everybody's got to get hosed. My question to him is a simple one. What about the 51%, half of all Americans, who don't pay a nickel, a penny in federal taxes? They don't pay anything. They're receiving government benefits, welfare, food stamps, unemployment benefits, one welfare check after another. But they're not paying a dime in federal taxes. What about their balanced approach? If you're going to take stuff from Americans, if I have to subsidize people, why can't they pay for their own welfare? Why can't they pay for their own benefits? Why not ask them to sacrifice? Why keep asking the taxpayers to sacrifice? Because for Obama, he doesn't understand economics 101. He's never run a lemonade stand. He doesn't understand what produces a dollar. He doesn't understand where our tax money comes from. He has no idea how to run an economy. So we're now reduced to like a third world country. In Latin America, in Honduras, in El Salvador, in Venezuela, in Argentina, presidents come on the air and demonize their opponents and say, we're about to go bankrupt. I have to borrow more money. We're facing a financial fiscal crisis. Is this what we've been reduced to? That now we have El Presidente coming on and basically telling us we're going to go bankrupt? Are you kidding me? In the United States of America? This is how far and how fast and how low we have fallen under this shyster, under this wannabe Marxist dictator in the White House. And now, mark my words, he's going to say, no. Congress can't come to an agreement. I will raise the debt ceiling on my own. I will borrow even more money from your children and grandchildren. Evelyn in Mississippi, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I think that he's not self-sacrificing. It worried me right from the start because he pretended to be caring for the poor and middle class and took that huge vacation in Hawaii right after he was elected. You know, just so clear that the money was going to him and not to other people. But my comment had been that I think he's delusional. I do, and the people behind him are delusional also. That doesn't mean they're not strong, but they are.
Evelyn, look, you touched on it. You said the right word, delusional. I believe, and this is on the record, and I'm choosing my words very carefully, because I know Media Matters and all these left-wing smear merchants are listening. A man in the White House. Forget the fact that he's incompetent. Forget the fact that he's a socialist revolutionary. Forget the fact that he's anti-American. Leave all that off the table. when he starts talking about being like Abraham Lincoln, when he starts now lecturing Republicans and Democrats on how to forge a deal, when he's the man who's primarily responsible for the deal, he is like Caligula. He is like these Roman emperors who would parade around naked and tell everybody how beautiful their robes are. That's what he's like. And so you now have a third world socialist wannabe dictator reducing us to a third world socialist state. That's what we've become. And the press conference is going to be in 13 minutes, and El Presidente is going to come on the television set, and he's going to wag his finger, and he's going to threaten his opponents, and he's going to stand there and say he's not to blame, when everybody knows he's the one that's primarily to blame. And then he's going to go off on another vacation. I don't know if it's going to be Hawaii or Martha's Vineyard or wherever it's going to be, but he's going to go and stuff his face along with Michelle Obama. And then she's going to come back having put on 5 pounds. And then we have to listen to her tell us how we can't have cherry vanilla ice cream and French fries. That's the routine with these people. And so this is what we have. We have a mentally ill person in the White House. This is the repeat of the fall of Rome. And so until we say enough is enough, Mr. President, you had a good time. You partied with Paul McCartney. You partied with Stevie Wonder. You spent not billions, trillions of dollars. You rode around on your corporate jet. You had a very nice time. You partied it up in the White House. Now go back to the south side of Chicago where you belong. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Part of the challenge the news media has had in covering this story is the old habit of taking the on the one hand, on the other hand approach.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Speaking of mentally ill, here was former Vice President Al Gore. I guess he just came out of his massage parlor and he wrote on his official blog, anticipating the president's speech tonight and the deficit debate. Here's what he had to say on his official blog. Big Al. He wrote that some Republicans are living in a, quote, alternative version of reality. And he further wrote on his official blog, quote, a significant number of Republican and Tea Party members of Congress apparently hold the view that there actually would not be consequences for global markets or the U.S. economy if we defaulted, end of quote. So there is Big Al telling us, no, the problem isn't all the spending and borrowing by the president and by Nancy Pelosi and Dirty Harry Reid. No, it's the Tea Party. It's the Republicans. Obama is addicted to power. Gore is addicted to sex. And I think now it's time for Al to go back and visit his masseuse. He's made his comment. And guys, do we have his masseuse anywhere? Where's the masseuse?
I squirmed to try and get out of his grasp, telling him to stop down several times. And I finally told him and said, you're being a crazy sex poodle, hoping that he'd realize how weird he was being, yet he persisted. He was much stronger than me, bigger than me, and insistent. It was completely unnerving. And I realized that resistance was making him giggle and pursue more strongly.
Thanks, Jeff. I got a quick comment that I think could help the debt ceiling debate, this debacle. I think Boehner and anybody else out there in the media who is on the right side, the conservative side, needs to start saying what it is. America needs to borrow more money. We keep saying debt ceiling. I think half America has no idea what debt ceiling is. They could think that means we need to borrow less. I think we're being played with. If Americans knew that the great country of America, we're struggling about borrowing money, not about some supposed debt ceiling, I think Americans would wake up a little more enough to move the polls and get this moving.
You're right, Jerry. That's the thing. What Obama wants is you've maxed out all your credit cards, and now he wants more credit cards to pay for the maxed out credit cards. That's what it is in a nutshell. He wants to spend us into oblivion, and it's time we cut those credit cards. Cut them all. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. Savage.